Hello and welcome to the wild wormhole where, much like the card, you never quite know what you're gonna get. Like two episodes in a single month, take that, Call of Discovery. I'm your host, D-House, here with not one but two J's. We got J Trash of the Double Blanks Infamy. J, how you doing?
Oh, wait a second. I thought we were doing a Flesh and Blood podcast. What is this?
Okay, muting his mic. Moving over to the other J, known as J, also known as J Bray, also known as Jim, also known as James, also known as J Bray UK, also known as J Bray WW, depending on which website you find him online. So, whoever you are, how are you doing?
Also hey. Known as Second String J.
Oh my word. I thought you were muted. Great to be here.
Yeah. But seriously, why do you have so many names online? Can we just
I just am indecisive. I don't know. I like Jimbotron, I like Jimberly, Jimothy, all of the above. It's just gotta keep people on your toes, you know?
AOL for Love is another one of your names.
Hey, we don't need to throw my emails on there.
But hey, here we are for the very first time, three of us. For the first time since old Rebel Spy Mike Rudin in the very first episodes of the Wild Wormhole back in 2018. I heard he died.
Oh, gosh.
He's having a heart attack right now because of the stuff going on with Marvel Snap, but we won't talk about that here.
Yeah, maybe we could get him back on here for rehashing of Keyforge, but... The three of us together. So, more so than ever, I truly don't know what's going to come out of this episode. So, if you're listening, just prepare your ears. I
love it. I love it. When I first started podcasting with you, like, me and Chris had already been podcasting for, like, a while before I started podcasting with you. And then we started, and you, like, sent over this note sheet, and it had details of everything we were going to talk about. Notes, show notes. Like XML sheet. I mean, it was just to the T. And today you're just like, all right, we're gonna wing it. I was like, let's go.
He's a new man. David is reformed.
It's been double blanksified here for all the Star Wars Destiny people. But yeah, we're recording. Honestly, I mean, I stayed up late. It's really late. It's way past my bedtime. But I stayed up late. I filled up on some pigs on a blanket. Waiting for old Jimbo here to get out of a movie, and I was like, we gotta record tonight for multiple reasons. One, Vault Keepers qualifiers. Two, the two wormhole hosts who can actually play Keyforge actually played, and we both qualified. Who knows where Jay
Trash went. I didn't want to embarrass anybody.
Yeah, that makes sense. Two, we got a brand new Keyforge article today. Hype. Thank you, Ghost Galaxy. And three, I've got a brand new deck here that's screaming to be opened and explored in King Potato. So I can't wait to get to that. So
can we still play King Potato? That's like the easiest game ever. We get it right every time.
Okay. Okay. Hold on a second. In all of the episodes of Wild Wormhole, I am the only host to ever, ever correctly guess King Potato. So,
I almost had it last week.
Yeah, but almost is second place is last place. Okay, it almost doesn't matter.
Second place is great. All right.
I say last week. It was like a month ago when we recorded.
We get a lot of trash talk from Zach Armstrong at Call of Discovery.
Is this?
Yeah, exactly. Most of his jokes are about how we have an annual Wild Wormhole episode, as in we only record once a year. But hello, folks. I don't know if you've looked at your podcast feed, but this is two Wild Wormhole episodes in a single month. And I haven't seen any Call of Discovery episodes dropping in my feed, so...
Zach, where you at? Call of Discovery.
More like
hello.
Ed, where you at, Ed?
Also true. I did see Ed in the wormhole. It was quite fun. We hung out, had some nice tea. It was delightful.
Yeah, I'll just leave it there. So we're gonna get into our our KeyForge lives here in a minute. We just played in these Vault Keeper qualifiers again. Shout out Joker 41, not 42, as I misspoke in previous episodes. Joker 41 is straight up giving cash away to KeyForge players because he loves the game so much. I mean, that just warms your heart, doesn't it?
He's a baller, dude.
He's giving straight baller cash and decks. I mean, come on. So if you have been under a rock, Vault Keepers is they've been doing four different qualifiers, sealed three decks, sealed survival. Jim and I entered into it, so you get these three decks that are actual real decks. He sends you the QR codes and all that, and six rounds in the qualifiers. You had to finish the six rounds with at least one deck alive. And spoiler alert, Jimbo here survived.
We did it.
You did
dude,
it.
Dude, you're a legend. You didn't also, just survive. You like...
Z-House survived. I don't want to be the only one taking credit here. Two of us survived.
I did
It was
survive.
A wild wormhole miracle.
I did survive.
One survived better.
Okay.
This goes back to my second place is still great joke. I did manage to qualify second in our heat. Which I took great pride in, even if it wasn't number one. Yep. But D-House, you got top place still.
I did. I started 2-2, finished my last games with a couple wins to finish 4-2. And so I had one deck surviving on his last legs. and actually, you can catch all of my games on our YouTube channel. I record all of them with commentary if you care to go back and watch my games. But the real highlight here, as much shade as I love to give old Jimbo here, is he actually came in wrecked face, and everyone was commenting on, hey, we haven't seen Jay Bray in, oh, I don't know, a year. And then he comes in and straight up dominates. And so we talk about how, you know, sealed survival, but in a much more real sense of that word, you survived something much more important. Do you want to speak to that for a minute?
Yeah, I'll at least give a quick update. So kind of the big reason, like, I haven't been on KeyForge or podcast, obviously. So last July, actually a year ago tomorrow.
Well, today when this posts, it'll be exactly a year ago.
That's true. Okay, so July 22nd last year, I was in just a very serious car accident. So it was head-on collision. Was not my fault at all. But managed to break a lot of bones, both arms and both legs. Ended up kind of being stuck in a hospital bed for about 2 months, and kind of been a long road of recovery back. So yeah, fairly serious, but thankful to say that we are on the mend and pretty much done with recovery, which has been awesome. Able to walk, able to function mostly normally. Which is pretty great. And honestly, just wanted to give just a quick shout out just to the KeyForge community in particular. You guys really were incredible just showing your support. I know somebody made a hoodie for me, which said Jay Bray survived the wormhole, which is like the sweetest thing ever, showing up at my door. Just to feel that love from the community. It was something that like I'll always cherish, and just made it so rewarding to come back and, you know, do well in the first event. It's almost like it just never missed a beat. So, yeah, it was a pretty serious thing. But yeah, we're back and I'm very happy to be here. So
love it. Yeah, man, what a crazy day, crazy couple of months. But man, yeah, obviously I'm not going to get all sappy and, get all the tears flowing here. Cause this is the wild wormhole.
That's right.
But genuinely so grateful that that your life was spared that day and you remained so positive through it. It was so cool to see the KeyForge community come around you, and literally guys who had never met you were donating to help with medical expenses. And do you want to tell the name of the person who gave you the sweatshirt, the hoodie, or is that like a wormhole secret?
I do want to give them a shout out, but I don't know if their legs are weak enough to handle that. I'll just leave it at that.
You could do a rhymes with. Maybe people can.
Songstrong, Mac.
There it is.
Yeah.
There it is.
It was awfully sweet, and I do want to send just a ton of gratitude, despite all of the jokes.
I love it. I love it. But as we learned a couple days ago on the Team Covenant live, first live stream of KeyForge for a while, they said game communities need good rivalries from content creators. So we're here to serve.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah, we're coming after you still, Call of Discovery.
Yeah, no sweatshirt could ever heal this wound. Just kidding. But for real, man. Well, it's good to see you forge some keys. And I mean, also the crazy thing about this, about you coming in and getting second place, is everyone else got their decks 2 days before the event, or like, I don't know, 36 hours before the event. And I mean, I imagine some people practiced. I mean, I would. That was my plan. Sure. We were not planning on playing on the event, but then they had a bunch of drops, and I texted you like 30 minutes before the event started, like, hey, I think I'm going to play in this heat. You should play too. And you're like, nah. And then 2 seconds later, you're like, okay.
Yeah, I had really good intentions to go for a nice little run outside, and then I looked out my window, and the rain was coming down so ferociously. And I was like, all right, I think I'm supposed to play some KeyForge.
Yep.
Shuddered a little bit because I was scared of what that could look like. Said, let's ride.
Yep. So what was your excuse, Jay Trash?
I'm not going to talk about it, but I am curious. I've never played in an event where you get three decks and then you just have to have one that survives. What's the strategy there? Do you like play your worst deck first and see how far you can get so you can finish strong with your better decks? Or do you start strong with your best deck and then at the end, hopefully other people have done the same and lost and now they're using their weak decks as well?
Yeah.
I think those are the strats.
Which one do you do though?
Like, well, I do think there's something to be said for like the sets too, because we know we were playing, everyone got one Worlds Collide deck and two Mass Mutation decks. And so there, I also think there was a strategy there to think about, like, Mass Mutation decks, some of them really benefit from mutant synergy that can be bilateral, like both players can, like Vault's Blessing, you get an amber for every, you know, mutant. And so, like, do you play your Mass Mutation early because other people are playing Worlds Collide and they want to finish with their big Mass Mutation deck that tends to be rated higher? Like, at least crossed my mind, like, maybe I should play my mutant decks up front. Because I had like Professor Torado when, you know, every mutant gains reap, draw card. So I'm like, I don't want to do, I want to play this against Worlds Collide. I don't want to play this against Mass Mutation. So, but all that to say, I decided to, again, I got my decks 10 minutes before the event. So I literally said, okay, I'm going to start bad and finish with good. Because I have no practice, and so I started with my lowest rated deck, which was my Worlds Collide deck, which its name was Cranky Sean of the Beach, which is a hilarious name, and then built to my next rated Mass Mutation deck, and then my highest rated Mass Mutation deck. So that's what I did.
What was your lowest rate one?
My lowest was Cranky Sean, which was a 66. So I had pretty strong SAS scores.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yep.
Yeah, I did kind of the same strategy that D-House just said. So my Worlds Collide deck was my lowest rated at a 63. So I just figured I haven't played KeyForge in a while and I don't know this deck. So let me just kind of get a rep on it at least, probably lose with it, and then, you know, work my way to the better deck that I can hopefully get some wins off of. And the tournament had other plans, and this deck did not play like a 63, which I am happy to get into in a little bit. but I will say that definitely like wasn't the strategy for everybody. So Quick Draw, who ended up winning our heat, started with their best deck.
Who was my very first opponent, just for the record.
So it's just a different strategy of, well, if you think everyone's going to go with their worst, why not start with your best? That way you're not playing on an equal footing, which worked out. So it's kind of funny that, you know, D-House and I both had strategies that got us qualified, but you know, the other strategy works just as well. So I think it really is a lot of it just comfort. What are you feeling confident on, and like, can you just roll with the punches of that? And so for us, it was, let's maybe take it a little bit slower and hope for the best. And for other people, it's, let's just knock them out. So yeah, it was definitely, I think those are like the two biggest strategies. I can't think of any reason why you'd start with your second, but I'm sure someone can tell me why that's the most brilliant strategy.
You know what I just realized? I just looked up the SAS of my first Mass Mutation deck, and it was a 65. So I went from 66 down to 65 up to 74.
Okay, unless it was purely accidental.
Yeah, it was purely accidental, because again, this was like, because I got my decks and then had to turn in an order of the decks I was going to play. So I was just like, start with Worlds Collide. Like, so if I had more time to think about it, who knows what I'd come up with. But
My honest answer was I was going to go Worlds Collide first, because I hadn't had time to put all of the extra pips into TCO yet. And so I was like, well, we got to get some games started. You know, I was literally scrambling. And so I was like, all right, well, Worlds Collide, I can at least just, you know, import and then play immediately. So that was my thought process there.
Yeah, and your Worlds Collide, or your Mass Mutation deck had, what is it, like 16 extra pips or something crazy like that?
One of them had 10 extra pips. The other one had 15.
Yeah, that's stupid.
So do you have to play one of your surviving decks at the like final day?
So you get to choose. Yeah. Yeah. But we should
choose out of all three, or choose out of the ones that survived.
All three.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know why you would choose one that lost. But
well, because it's adaptive. It's all adaptive. So you. That, which I love. I think that's what makes it so intriguing, because you could genuinely choose a lower rated deck that you think has some spice to it, because it's adaptive and you're just playing to something else anyway. So. I genuinely considered it with the decks that I have available, but I'm not sure. I need to turn in my final deck in the next like day, I think. But it is interesting. The final cut being adaptive definitely changes the game and really makes the practice with the deck even more important. All right, so Jim, you got to talk about, how did you go? What did you go? You went 5-0 to start.
5-1. I started 4-0.
Oh, that's right. You started 4-0 with a 63 rated deck. So, man, what is that? What is the deck? How the heck did you do that?
Yeah. So, so it was my Worlds Collide deck. So, the name of it, for anybody who wants to look it up, is called Steel Toe Lynn Slum Elder.
Okay, Steel Toe, S-T-E-E-L, right?
Yep, Lynn Slum Elder was the World Cods deck. So it's a Logo Shadow Star Alliance deck with honestly like pretty solid stats for something rated, you know, below 50%. You know, it's 16 expected amber. It's got 9 efficiency, which that's really... the way that I won is just, you just cycled through and did kind of enough to get by. So yeah, I mean, this deck was just kind of cool with, just the board presence that it had. It had a lot of cards that I think just alone don't do a whole lot, but I feel like my strategy in game modes like this, where you're all just kind of learning as you go, is to play more of like the board control, style, you know, looking for crazy combos is a little bit trickier to do when you don't know your deck very well. You didn't, you know, hand pick this one. So I just built up a board and kind of, you know, reaped a victory eventually, or did enough to kind of keep their board clear. So I can go through a couple of those things real quick. Sure. So in Shadows, some of the creatures on there's two copies of Simon, which Simon is a 1 power creature, so a beefy boy. He's got Skirmish and then Fight. Put the creature Simon fights on top of its owner's deck. So in my opinion, that's better than killing the creature in a lot of ways, because in a game that you're racing to get as much amber as possible, you're stacking the top of their deck with creatures that they have to take 2 turns to be able to typically get anything happening with it. So Simon is actually one of the MVPs of this thing, just constantly cycling their creatures back. It also had two copies of Breaker Hill, which Breaker Hill is another beefy boy at one power with elusive. And that card says each of Breaker Hill's neighbor gains action, steal one. So where I was just building up a very large board pretty much every game, I'd play them kind of on the end or have multiple houses kind of on either side of it. And so every single turn, no matter what house I picked, it was almost like a guaranteed steal one. So even if you got over or got into check, I could typically pull people back off of check. So it was kind of just like a very random shadow suite that just kind of worked. Logos also had a lot of stealing. There's two copies of Information Exchange, which that's a just an action that says steal one, but if your opponent stole from you, you get to steal two instead. And then also had two copies of Cutthroat Research, which just says steal two if your opponent has eight or more. So it's kind of anytime the opponent tried to ramp up, it just had enough in hand to kind of pull them back down to earth.
And most importantly, though, you don't I feel like you just went through your logo suite and you didn't hit the most important card.
Well, you're probably not even thinking the most. Oh, I see what you're saying. The most important card is the Wild Wormhole, which is the greatest card.
Come on,
this
is low hanging fruit here.
For sure, sure. You get an amber for playing it and it says play, you win the game. Which is honestly best card in Keyforge. I don't know why everybody doesn't run five of these in their deck.
Yep. Exactly.
But yeah, it's always an MVP for sure. But actually, the MVP of this deck, shockingly, was Groupthink Tank. So there's a copy of Zenzik, which is great for recycling. There's a Daughter in here, which is, again, more card draw. But I think three of the five games I played, I went first and had Groupthink Tank in my opening hand.
Mm.
And this thing is just a boss in early game, especially with the strategy of trying to keep board control. So it's a four power, three armor creature. It says action, deal four damage to each creature that shares a house with at least one of its neighbors. So the coolest thing about this is, like, I'd always try to get Zenzi in my opening hand. Never did, but this thing found its way in there. So if you play it first, your opponent now has their hand of realistically three or four cards from that house, and they're wanting to start building a board, but they can't. Because the moment they play two creatures on their first turn, I can just Groupthink Tank and more than likely kill them both. So it just got people just really on the back foot early on trying to figure out, like, how do you play around this thing that's just completely cutting off any normal strategy.
That's wild.
So this thing was honestly the MVP for me all of the games that it got out there, just for, you know, keeping that board cleared. And then I could start building up the Simons and the Breaker Hills. And we haven't even gotten the Star Alliance yet, but it's all the classics in there. It's got the First Officer Frayn. It's got a couple of cards to protect my creatures even more. Stealth mode to stop actions coming in. So just, yeah, kind of a lot of the suite that, you know, they weren't like the best of the best of Star Alliance, but they still did the typical shenanigans. So yeah, that was kind of that deck. And the reason I'm focused on this one is I actually started 4-0 on this thing. So 32 people in the qualifiers. It got down to, there's just two of us at 4-0. So yeah, it made it all the way to the top, got me qualified just within four rounds, which is great. And then Quick Draw absolutely took me to town with his deck. But
yeah,
was,
that deck took me to town in the very first round, so that's cool too.
Sure, one of us got snaglocked, the other one just lost. But yeah. I got two keys on him. I was proud of that. Made him scared a little bit, but no, ultimately he did get the win there, which was very thoughtful because I wanted to play with my second deck. So, you know, that was super sweet.
Yep. Pretty wild, man. 63 sass. Yeah. Took it to qualification. So, now, you know, the unfortunate news is you mixed up your dates, didn't you?
I did. So, managed to qualify, was super excited about it. And I did not realize, that the same day as the finals, I'm actually in a wedding. Unfortunately, I can't participate in the finals to try to win $500 or however much the final prize is. But, you know, now D-House, you have one less person you have to work through. Because knowing our luck, we would have impaired like round two. So, yeah, definitely a bummer, but I was just so excited to get to play again and get to compete and perform well. I mean, I was going to be excited if I just took a game. So to take five was unreal. Felt very much like riding a bike, but yeah, it was super sweet.
It's pretty sweet. Now, I mean, I feel like since you're both in the Wild Wormhole, the other Jay should be able just to like take your deck and play for you.
I can just play for you.
Yep.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, you'll lose first round, but at least, you know, your spot will be covered.
Yeah, like, you know, nice little participation trophy at least.
Now, is Call of Discovery playing in this?
No.
No, that was the only way they got.
They knew better. They both knew better.
Yeah, probably.
Yep. Yeah, because also, Jim, your final deck that you plan on playing is insane. You've got a dab deck.
Jolker 31 hooked me up with like the coolest decks ever. So he got me a cute little 63 that just rocked the tournament. But the spicy third deck that I never even got to play was a 75 rated Mass Mutations deck that had Essence Scale, Auto Encoder, Mutagenic Serum with 10 mutants, Adaptoid. It's called the Shipwright, Shipwright, that stops food.
Oh yeah, I like that.
That is a King Potato worthy name right there.
Absolutely. So yeah, the Essence Scale Auto Encoder had Dark Amber Vault with 10 mutants. Like, oh, it's so cool. Which Dark Amber Vault, for anybody that doesn't know, is an artifact. It says after you play a mutant creature, you draw a card, and then each friendly mutant creature gets +2 power. So with that and Auto Encoder, I mean, it only had a 9 efficiency, but it went so much faster than that. Because any card you didn't want, you just discarded, and then Auto Encoder just archived the top card of your deck, and then you play out all of your mutants, and then it had Triple Mind Fire, which was so funny to play D-House with, because I got them all in my opening hand, and so he got to start his game with 3 cards, and it was beautiful. It was just insane, and it has like 8 damage pips, so it always kind of helped clear off your opponent's board. But really the spice was the like Mutagenic Serum with Adaptoid and then just cycling like crazy.
Yeah, awesome. I can confirm it's gross. Like the only bad part about that deck is the double Bumblebird.
Totally. And the Auto Encoder is just like, it's fine. We'll take care of it.
Yeah. Even that there's a Scout in Untamed that's like actually insane.
Yeah, because you can just so Scout's a rare card in Untamed. It says for the remainder of the turn, up to 2 friendly creatures gain skirmish, and you can fight with them. So you play out your whole Untamed hand, and every time you play a card that has any pip on it, so whether that's an Amber or one of the enhancement pips, Adaptoid, if it's out on the field, gets triggered, and that one says every time you play a card with a bonus icon. For the remainder of the turn, it gains either +2 armor, assault 2, or fight steel 1. And each of these can stack. So you just load up on the fight steel 1, play scout to give it skirmish, and then however many cards you played with any sort of bonus icon, you're now stealing that much and dealing in 4 damage. I mean, it's just insane.
It would have been a phenomenal run if you could play in the finals, so I'm genuinely disappointed, but you know.
This was for sure the pick. I was actually talking with my last opponent about it. We were kind of going through the deck list and both kind of getting excited. So shout out to Ewok, my final opponent there. We didn't get to play this one, but it was just so cool just to kind of talk through just the adaptive lines and it was going to be pretty sweet.
Yeah. Is Dark Amber Vault is a Maverick?
In this deck? No, it's it can show up in any house.
I see.
Yeah, this was like card number 001. So initially it showed up as I think Dis, like in the card list. Mm-hmm. But on Dex of Keyforge, it's showing up as a Star Alliance card.
Right.
But yeah, it can show up in any house. It's just very rare. I think this is actually the first time I've like quote unquote owned a deck with Dark Amber Vault, and it was awesome. That's sick.
Yeah, I've opened a lot of Mass Mutation and still don't have a Dav deck, which is really disappointing. But that card is insane.
Absolutely agreed. So But yeah, that was the run. D-House, I know you are playing in the finals this weekend. We won't go
what
too
deck
in
are
depth
you running?
With just your deck list, just because I know you're still thinking about which deck to pick and, you know, trying to keep some spice there. But do you want to share a little bit just kind of about your experience with qualifiers at least?
Yeah, I don't mind talking about my first couple decks. Like Cranky Sean, I got destroyed round one against Quick Draw. I got snagged into, you know, basically being time walked out of a couple turns. Like I had zero chance of winning that game. And I was a little disappointed because this deck did seem fun. It was Worlds Collide, Dis, Logo, Star Alliance thing with Dis had three Dendricks, which is a 5-power demon. Your fight, your opponent discards a random card from their hand. Which three of those is pretty sweet. Then Lilithal, another 5-power guy, Malison, 5-power, Snag, 5-power. So I had some big boys in Dis. That seemed like really fun. Logos had Neutron Shark, Eddie, you know, a couple Information Exchange, Twin Bowl, Quant, just a lot of like Igor, Daughter, all like good quality stuff. Star Alliance had Uncharted Lands with a bunch of Star Alliance dudes. And so I was really excited to see it happen. And then it just, I mean, I truly like didn't even play that game. So I need to get this back on TCO and play some other games because I think it could be fun with old Cranky Sean. And then my second, so I didn't win anything with that, but my second deck did win. It's Charismatically Ambidextrous Sander, and the it's Logo Sanctum Shadows Mass Mutation. Highlights are double Kurzap, which is destroy each non-mutant creature. So against Worlds Collide, phenomenal. Against Worlds Collide, stupid. double Munchling, which was actually significant because it has Skirmish, and I had one stood against many, which allows you to ready and fight with a friendly creature three times, each time against a different enemy creature. So I could actually like cycle a little bit with that combo. It's pretty sweet. Triple Lieutenant Gorvenal. So again, if he's out there after you fight the creature, Gorvenal captures one. So one stood against many with a Munchling with Gorvenal out there was a lot of captured amber. But probably the spiciest thing about this was it had four Gamgee. Four.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. In one of my games, you can watch it on YouTube, I opened with three of them in my opening hand. So I literally just dropped three Gamgee, and they responded. They're like, well, that's a lot of Gamgee. And I was like, yeah, I know, right?
Where that come from?
Which provides your opponent a little bit of an issue because, like, they're like, okay, I can't burst up too high because then he just reaps out and steals all my amber. So I got to deal with these Gamgees. So it was fun. I love having decks with four copies of anything, pretty much. And this had four copies of Gamgee, three copies of Gorvenal, and Logos had a bunch of double copies. I love double copies of stuff. So it had great opponents, a lot of fun. I won't get into my last deck. I think it's what I'm going to take to the finals. I've been playing some practice games. My brother came into town to because he's getting deployed. He's in the Army. He's getting deployed next week. And he's played a little bit of Keyforge with me in the past, and this time I was like, okay, you're going to be deployed on the other side of the world, but he'll have access to a laptop. So I'm like, learn to play Keyforge with me, then we can play online all the time. And he loved it. He fell in love with Keyforge. So great. And so he helped me practice my deck a bit. And because for Adaptive, it's just a different kind of practice, right? Like, you got to figure out, like, when do you take the other deck? When do you take yours? It's weird. I know you love Adaptive, Jim.
Yeah, dude. I just like the quick, like, you just have to evaluate this thing at face value. And honestly, just trying to be tricky with what you bring in to try to confuse your opponent. So I usually like the best of three, just at least give me a couple reps with what they brought to then evaluate. But yeah, it's just a different play style to try to navigate all of that, which is super cool to me.
Yep. But yeah, you can go watch my games on YouTube if that's your thing. And I'll probably record my games in the Final Cut too, or singular game. I actually don't know if it's single elimination or I don't know what it is. So we'll see. I think it is single elimination because I think he has a bracket that he's using. But so it could be just that's one game. Correct. I could post one game on YouTube on Saturday.
of the finals and you winning.
Yeah, there it is. But yeah, I'm really excited. Again, these community-driven tournaments are super fun and gets me excited about KeyForge. And I'm so glad you played some KeyForge. And JTrash, maybe you'll play KeyForge one day too.
Yeah, eventually. I plan on it at some point. Maybe whenever we get these cooperative games scenarios.
Wow, what a segue. That was so natural.
I mean, I do this for a living.
All right, take us into the new segment of this podcast, Jay.
All right, yeah. So Ghost Galaxy posted an article today, which I was personally pretty excited about, detailing their plans for continuing the cooperative format for KeyForge, which I haven't even tried yet because it was a print and play. I'm just not going through all that effort. And then if I recall, that Aegis Studios or whatever had it, but then FFG made them take it down, I think. Is that correct?
I think that sounds familiar. I mean, I bought it from them beforehand, so I didn't see what happened afterwards, but I do think...
Oh, no. It was for Champions. The print and play Champions.
It was. The Ronin set. Yep.
Yeah, they made them take that down, and I think... In turn, they took down the KeyForge one because you couldn't get any more. Anyway, but, I mean, all of us, not just me, really enjoy cooperative card games like Champions, Arkham Horror for me. I know Lord of the Rings you've played before, David.
Yeah.
So I am excited about trying these. And they mentioned in the article that this year they will have printed versions at retailers. In addition, at Gen Con, which is this weekend, right? Or is it next weekend?
Oh, I don't know. It's not this weekend. It's August, right?
Is it in August?
I'm pretty sure.
So, sometime in the next couple, less than a month.
Yeah, it's August 4th through 7th. So, it's a week from, two weeks from now, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, in 2 weeks, they'll have printed copies that you can... They're called Gen Con... Special edition, Gen Con edition, or whatever versions of the decks or the scenarios that you can get at Gen Con, which I think is super awesome that they were able to secure the agreement and purchase the IP and then already have printed copies of these. So that kind of shows you how fast they can do this kind of stuff.
Yeah, because Christian Peterson owns the printing company, Artiforge. The fact that they can literally... I mean, here's an idea. Let's do it. Hit print, and we're ready. Like, I mean, that was a fast turnaround from... I mean, they were finalizing it in June. And, you know, first week of August, they have stuff to you know, get out there. I'm like, you know, there have been there's been some talk online about Soulforge Fusion was printed by Artiforge, which is the company owned by Christian Peterson, and it wasn't the best quality, and... So they were like worried, how's this going to affect KeyForge? Well, I think this will be a great test of like the quality of 100%. What they can do. But this, you can't deny the speed. I mean, that's crazy that they can get this ready for Gen Con.
Yeah, I thought that was a very like hopeful thing. Like, it gives me hope for what they can do and how fast they can do things. So I thought that was really interesting. And like you said, I'm curious to see what the quality of these are. And we'll know very soon if it's the same old quality or if it's going to be that Soulforge jank.
You have Soulforge cards, right, Jay? What's your opinion about it?
They are hot, hot, steamy garbage.
Oh, cool. Great.
But part of that is... Because I don't think that it's the printing. I think that their graphic design is not great. And I don't know what happened. Because I almost feel like it could be like whoever made the files. They were just super grainy files for whatever reason. I don't know if you've ever worked with Photoshop before, but that kind of stuff can happen. But I guess we'll find out. Whenever people start cracking these open. By the way, I want a copy of these, so if anybody is going to Gen Con, I will pay for shipping on these.
And yeah, he won't pay for the product. You have to buy it for him. It's no, gift, but he will pay for shipping.
But yeah, the Soulforge cards are not great, unfortunately.
Well, it'll be interesting. We'll learn a lot. But good for Ghost Galaxy. I want them to get some, like, you know, some income, some, like, oh, here, look at Keyforge players buying Keyforge product to get whatever they need rolling to make it, you know, worth mm-hmm. it. Other than instead of waiting 6+ months to you know, be able to print the next set and do all that. Now, I will say, we talked about this earlier, the solo/co-op format of Keyforge got you excited. I do play a lot of Marvel Champions, but I tried the Rise of the Kraken with Jim mm-hmm. and another friend of ours, and it was not the most fun, but maybe I just wasn't mm-hmm. in the mindset of, oh, I can't wait to play this, like, cooperative scenario. So
right,
and we didn't have decks that, like, could deal with, they didn't have big boys that could fight and, you know, do damage to this guy. I don't know, it was interesting. Do you remember that, Jim?
Right,
vaguely. Yeah, I remember setting it up and just be like, whoa, we were not prepared for this. So yeah, I think with a little bit more understanding of, like, what we're getting into, we probably could have picked better decks to have, you know, gone up against the key racking. But yeah,
it could be, it could be too, like, I know in a lot of FFG card games, they're known for, like, the first scenario being incredibly difficult and also not fun. So there's a second scenario that I see called Abyssal Conspiracy, and it doesn't look like it's just one big boss battle. It's talking about malignant undersea cult seeks to open 5 ancient seals to bring out a dark domination of the Crucible. Players must prevent the cult from achieving their objectives by bravely descending into the murky depths of an ancient sea, and there investigate a series of locations in order to locate the foul trendles of the cultist plot. So it sounds like almost a completely different experience than what that first scenario presented. So I want to see what else they can do with a system that exists for a cooperative Keyforge. The other reason that I think it's a really cool format is that decks that might be trash and standard might actually be decent in a cooperative format. So it gives decks that you probably aren't ever going to play again another chance to actually be playable, which is cool.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I did get the Abyssal Conspiracy printed by the Aegis creative. So it's been sitting there. I've never tried it. But maybe this will encourage me to give it another go. It definitely is nice when we have, like, game night and there's 3 of us and we don't want one person to just sit by and, like, watch the other 2 guys play, to actually have it like an option for all of us to play.
Right. And they're including new nightmare cards for these scenarios too, which is interesting. So they've already designed, I'm guessing they designed new cards for these that make it even more difficult.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And, you know, maybe we'll see more of this. I don't know. Yeah, obviously easier to, like, hey, here's one file we can print and mass, you know, produce this, send it out. A little bit easier than, you know, a traditional Keyforge set. So I don't mind something in the meantime while they're trying to figure out how to print the Winds of Exchange.
Yep.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I think it's time for the.
I've been nervous about this truly all night.
The most important segment of the Wild Wormhole, King Potato.
King Potato.
Let's go.
Okay, I've got. I don't know if you can hear this. I've got a brand new deck. Can you hear that?
Yeah, I hear it.
So it's still in the box of the Worlds Collide. I bought on GameNerds.com. They were selling displays of Worlds Collide for like $20 or something like that. So I ordered this like a month ago, and I've been very slowly opening decks when I felt like playing a new deck. And I've got a new one just for you guys. So I'm going to open this, and we're going to play a little game of King Potato. And you're going to try to guess the houses.
craziest deck of all time here.
Okay, here we go. Okay. Now. Oh my gosh, this is a great name for a deck, too. I was like, this is going to be a stupid name. I know it is. Okay. Are you guys ready?
I'm ready.
The name of this deck that I just opened live on air is The Aviator That Fears the Little Guy.
Wow.
Nice.
The Aviator That Fears the Little Guy.
What set is this from?
This is Worlds Collide.
Man, oh man. Are you kidding me? Okay, no. Seriously, shout out Top Gun Maverick for hosting this podcast.
Yeah. What the heck? I mean, this just shows Keyforge loves Wild Wormhole.
That's incredible.
So, yes. all right, guys. The Aviator That Fears the Little Guy from Worlds Collide. I'm looking at the deck.
I think I've got my guess.
I already got mine too.
The deck looks to have a little bit of spice in there, guys. I'm not gonna lie, this looks interesting. So well,
that just told me so much.
Well, here we go.
Are you kidding me? Okay, well, taking out Brobnar is one of my guesses. Go ahead.
Do you want me to say my guesses?
I don't mind either way. Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm going to say Star Alliance for the Aviator, because they're like pilots and such, right? And then for Fear, I'm going to say Dis, because, you know, they're scary little demon guys. And then for a little guy, I'm going to say Shadows, because they're all little tiny guys.
Jay, that is literally what I had written down.
Let's go.
Which means I can't pick that.
You have to.
Well, because with the fear part, I was like, is it Dis? Is it Brobnar? You know, the big giants coming through. But I'm actually going to swerve a little bit more. So actually, with the fear part, I'm going to go with Saurian. I think those political dinosaurs, you know, just with their new laws and things that they're writing, just, you know, really striking fear into...
That's true.
Man, that's tricky. I will stick with Star Alliance for the Aviator part of it, but the little guys, I'm actually gonna swerve to Logos. I know Daughter's the classic like little card in there, and obviously you can't call that a guide typically, but you know, a lot of just smaller powered creatures there, so we'll go Logos there. So sorry, in Star Alliance and Logos, locking it in. Tell me that I got
something to do,
and we can move on.
Well, gentlemen, what an interesting game of King Potato.
Get out of here.
What an interesting game of King Potato. The first house of the Aviator That Fears the Little Guy is Star Alliance.
Let's go.
Yay. Clap, clap, clap. The next house is Saurian.
Garbage.
2 for 3 for both of us is what I'm going to guess. I'm going to get some shadows. Go ahead.
The final house of the Aviator That Fears the Little Guy is... Shadows!
Yeah. Nice. Wow.
I almost stuck with it too, and I was like, oh, we can't just pick what Jay did.
I thought you were going to win it. I thought you were going to stick with Shadows.
Oh. I couldn't. No, I can't just agree with Jay Crash.
When you swerved to Saurian, I was like, oh, Jim's about to get King Potato.
Can't do it. No, because if I get King Potato, then we never get to play King Potato again. I knew what it was the whole time. Obviously, I know it every week, but... The moment you get it, you get retired, and that's no fun.
Yeah, so you always have to go 2 for 3 just so people know. People Which understand this time, you get it.
We both went 2 for 3, wink, wink. So.
Yep.
Oh, exactly. Draft, we didn't get it again.
The Aviator That Fears... I'm looking at this, I'm like, Aviator makes sense, Star Alliance. Fears totally. The little guy feels like Shadows.
Yep.
100%.
The fear thing, maybe it is like people fear the dinosaurs, so that's why it's fear. That's what the algorithm triggered.
What do you fear more, the dinosaurs or Dis?
It should have been Dis. They literally have a card called Fear. It's only from Coda, don't get me wrong, but there's a card called Fear in Dis.
There is.
I probably fear people from Brobnar more than the dinos.
Yeah, but there is a regrettable meteor in this deck, guys. Are you telling me you wouldn't fear a meteor heading your way?
No. That's true.
Just don't look up. You're fine.
They're scared of getting extinct.
I mean, have you watched Jurassic Park? I would fear the dinosaurs more than Brobnar. I mean, come on, guys.
Not the newest one, to be honest.
You know?
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, sure. This is kind of off tangent, but we didn't mention the sale that Asmodee is having.
Well, they don't. Oh, you mean like the current one?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. In other news, Jay Trash and I just spent a lot of money at Asmodee.
I wouldn't even say a lot of money for the amount of crap we got, dude.
True.
Yeah. Which I think my package is coming tomorrow, by the way.
Same.
So if you've been following Keyforge, Asmodee did a huge liquidation on Dex, like right before the sale went public to Ghost Galaxy, right? So a bunch of people got dollar Dex on clearance. Well, now they are clearing out all of their other Keyforge accessories, all their non-Dex. So we're talking play mats. We're talking sleeves. We're talking deck boxes. We're talking, what else?
Change. All mats, all 90% off, yes. Which is insane.
So I'm not ashamed to admit I spent $57 on 45 items.
We spent the same amount of money.
Yeah, it's, I mean, what do you know? It's crazy.
It's like going to Taco Bell and just getting everything on the dollar menu. Like, you don't need it, but you want it, and it was cheap. So.
But, like, the craziest part were, like, the Game Genic, like, three deck boxes that are normally $35 were $3.
Yeah.
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 And I got three playmats. Yeah.
Playmats for $2. And some of them were like really cool looking playmats.
Yeah. Sleeves were 60 cents for 40.
60 cents.
Yep.
That's
yeah.
Bananas.
The plasticky simpler deck boxes were $1, right?
Less, they were like 30 cents.
Oh, that's right, they were 30 cents.
The deck books, which are actually really cool in my opinion, have like the holes for the houses, yep. Those were like $1.50.
Yep, mm-hmm. I got those too. I use those, like I won one randomly in a giveaway, and I use that in another game because they're so sweet. So I think everything is still on clearance right now. I don't think they've cleared out, to my knowledge.
Some stuff is sold out, but most of it's still there.
So I bought a ton of it because I was saying, like, hey, when we get, like, in-person Keyforge going and we need to, like, rebuild the community, like, I don't mind giving away a playmat as, like, a door prize for a brand-new player,
right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. And I'm going to have a ton of this crap. Like, it's going to be a ton. So, deck boxes. Because I give away a lot of decks to new players. And I was like, but the hardest thing is always, like, what do you do if, like, they don't want to use the box that it comes in? Or it doesn't have the box anymore. Like, I have a bunch of decks that were donated to me that don't have the deck box. So, now I have, like, oh, here's a box for the deck that you can keep that, you know, helps keep it convenient. So I'm super excited to get that.
I agree. Me too.
Yeah, I'm looking at the website now. It does look like a lot of the deck boxes are still available. All the mats are out of stock. But like you said, those like cool boxes that can hold three of them. $350 still in stock. I mean, just a crazy deal.
And wow. You only have to get to $50 for free shipping too.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like $100 most places.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff, truly, I'm like, I don't need this, but if it's going to help a new player get excited about it, I don't know. I think it's worth it, even if you don't spend that much. So,
totally agree.
Yeah, pretty cool. Pretty neat. by the way, the aviator that fears the little guy just uploaded to DOK. It's a 65 SAS deck, so...
Nice.
It's not terrible, but I'm definitely gonna give this a whirl because it looks fun. It has a transport platform too.
Oh, everyone's favorite.
Yeah,
that's great. How many upgrades?
Three.
Okay, not bad. That's respectable.
With a chief engineer Walls, so you can get an upgrade back when you play him. So
yeah, that's fantastic.
So yeah.
Very cool.
Anyways,
I was gonna say, before we signed off, I did want to give quick shout out during all of the qualifiers for this Vault Keepers. There's only one person who did go 6-0, so just did want to give a quick shout out to Dinobot from qualifier 3 for being the only undefeated person through qualifiers. That was pretty sweet. So congrats there.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well done. All right. Well,
we did it.
That's it.
We did it. Three person.
You guys in 2024.
Yeah.
Two episodes.
Yeah.
In a short period of time, relative.
So good, y'all. Well, thanks for tuning in, guys. Maybe we'll do this again sometime. Who knows? It's the wormhole.
I mean, maybe we'll do it again before they do theirs. Their first one.
Yeah. We're popping out content like crazy. Come on now. Yeah. All right. It's late. I'm going to bed. Thanks for tuning in. See you in the next one. Bye.